National Radio Club.
Howdy, Xers. Welcome to Market Scope for March 2015. Michael Piesco of Las Vegas, Nevada, sent in a recording of the MLK Parade broadcast in Las Vegas a few years ago. But here is the station ID for you. Thanks, Mike. And next, we remember Gary Owens.
All right, as we get ready to begin our live broadcast of the 30th anniversary Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Parade right here in downtown Las Vegas. Once again, good morning, everybody. We are your Soul School station, KCEP Las Vegas, FM 88.1, and we're getting ready to celebrate our 40th anniversary of being in the community. Can we get some noise for that? Power 88, 40 years.
Yeah, baby.
All right, I am Mr. Sid, and
I am Lena Love.
And I am Franklin G, and we're all here to celebrate the Dr. King Parade, y'all.
Yes, the grandstands are full. We are at 4th and Bridger. The grandstands in front of us are full. The streets are filling up. You need to make your way over to the MLK Parade like now. Not now, but right now. Yeah.
And, of course, we're blessed with some wonderful weather. We're grateful for that. It's an absolutely beautiful day out here, so no excuse not to come down and check out the parade. And we're going to have our honor guard and color guard coming through very shortly. Franklin G and Lena Love, I thought it might be fun to do a little roll call and see who we got out here with us so far. We want to shout out some of the original Las Vegas high schools for the old school folks out there. How many of y'all went to Valley High School? Woo! Valley in the house?
Valley.
Valley Vikings. What about Rancho?
Rancho represent.
Rancho.
Announcer
Rancho.
Gary Owens of Laugh-In, Dead at 80, by Epic Times, February 13th, 2015. Gary Owens, best known as the announcer on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, died in Los Angeles at the age of 80. So long, beautiful downtown Burbank. Owens voiced over 3,000 cartoon characters, including Space Ghost, Roger Ramjet, Blue Falcon, and Batman. He also had a daily radio show on KMPC in Los Angeles for 20 years.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, Dolly, thank you. Dolly Parton just phoned in a few moments ago. She was going to be here at 20 to 9. There's 20 to 9 now. Her bra vapor locked on the freeway this morning with the sunshine out there, but everything's going to be just fine from KPRZ. We heard from Maggie Whiting, and we heard from Harry James and the music of your life here at AM 1150 KPRZ.
Favorite name in Mexican food.
Oh, where's my weather forecast here? Gosh, we have a sound we're going to sculpt into the granite at Mount Rushmore for permanent remembrance in just a few moments. And now here you are, Gary. Thank you very much, me. Today, rain decreasing this morning. Sun is shining right now. High should be about 65 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Chance of more light showers.
Thea.
Captain.
Thea.
56 degrees. I'm tired of this weather. How about you, Engineer Bill? All right, well, he's tired of me saying that about the weather. Wednesday, cloudy with a good chance of rain, high near 64 degrees. Oh, no, I have the Engineer Bill letter we got here a few moments ago, addressed to both of us. There, I want to show it to you here. It's from B. Reed. And B is, she's gone to broadcast school. She's gone, where did she go? She's got a third-class FCC license. You don't have yours yet, do you, Engineer Bill? Been in the business now 25 years. He's hoping to work toward it there, getting along that line, which enables him to do anything that 007, the 007, could do in line of combat with a turntable. Be my love, Mario Lanza. What a voice, huh? There's still a big, big fan club for Mario, as you know. And let me see here. I don't think a day goes by we don't get a letter for a Mario Lanza tune here at KPRZ and the music of your life. 10 minutes until 9 o'clock right now from KPRZ. Were there winds in your neighborhood? Ron Foster, no? Got your roof shingled okay, and you were working on that, I know. Some people had some wind damage last week. One guy's still trying to get his lawn chair out of the chimney at this time of the day. But now, as I look outside, the weatherman is right again. It's clouding up. It was sunshiny about an hour ago, and here it is, heavy clouds coming our way. So more rain. Read it and weep. All right, I will. Read it and listen. The KPRZ. This'll take your mind off it. 10 minutes till 9 on the Gary Owens Show. will play that for Jean in Glendale. She's a big Jerry Vale fan. 2 this morning right now at 6.5 minutes until 9 at KPRZ. It is clouding up again. Let me see here. You think mending your socks with a stapler is all right? I just tried that a few moments ago. Yes. All right. Let me just hobble over here. Do you have a list? No, I always walk this way. It's a music list. A Franz list. It's a classical music one. Officer Ernie Garcia is ready right now.
Gary, good morning. Only 2 accidents reported on the freeways, both in the clearing stages. From the CHP, this is Officer Ernie Garcia for KPRZ.
Thank you, Ernie. KPRZ, Gary Owens, butterfly alert. Butterfly alert. Everything you wanted to know about butterflies in under 30 seconds. Butterflies have only 2 wings. But on the 3rd wing, they'll finally answer the phone. A butterfly will never fly at night. He only flies weekends and holidays when the rates are cheaper. And most butterflies have actors in their stomachs before performing. Pass it on. 5 minutes till 9. The winds of music. Johnny Desmond, the Yellow Rose of Texas. For all you Texans, from KPRZ, it's 2.5 minutes till 9 right now. He used to work in Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, and New Orleans. Oh, that isn't part of Texas. I'm sorry. I'd forgotten. That's why I didn't do well in the call letters, I guess. Well, proof again that money may not buy happiness, but it certainly wipes a scowl off your face. From KPRZ's philosophy department, a mystery celebrity here on the Gary Owen Show this morning. Come in, please.
I'm Johnny Desmond, and I love the music they're playing.
Hey.
If the music you're hearing has special meaning for you, why don't you call your friends and let them know that they're playing our kind of music here on the music of your life.
Well, thank you, Johnny, for being a part of it. Oh, I just played the Yellow Rose of Texas by Johnny, and here he is in person. As you rifle your Rolodex, getting set for this day at business, I always know when my show is over, we have one more hour to go. I keep a cork in each ear, and when the corks pop out, I know it's time to go. This is KPRZ Los Angeles, AM 1150, and time for the 9 o'clock edition of the news. Here's Ron Foster. Ron?
Gary, Menachem Begin appears to be leaning towards recommending the sacking
Orange
of
County, 54
and 56 degrees in Los Angeles. Let's get back to Gary Owens and the music of your life on KPRZ.
Please set me free.
Emotion. Thank you, Brenda, on the Gary Owen Show. Good morning to you. Well, it's getting creepy outside again. We did have some sunshine between 7 and 8 this morning. Let's bron that sunshine. Just put it right over here on the mantelpiece and keep it for a few days. More rain coming our way. Full details upcoming in a few moments. 9 minutes past 9 o'clock from KPRZ, AM 1150, and the music of your life continues. Like so right now. Spots. They are immortal, aren't they? From KPRZ, and that's Harold Jackson on the vocal. He's been with them for 50 years. One of the original Ink Spots, and performed at the Palladium with the KPRZ gang and Les Brown and the Band of Renown about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's 11 minutes past 9. This is the Gary Owen Show. Good morning.
Bremen's International, in cooperation with Endemic Productions, presents The Creature with the Nuclear Uvula. Formerly Mob Psychology finds Roddy McDowell.
So terrifying that ushers insist on patrolling theater aisles in pairs.
Mighty in drama.
Mighty in emotion.
Mighty in passion.
Mighty innocuous.
Remember, movies are better than nothing.
No one admitted unless you're over 35 and accompanied by a large sumo wrestler or an alert registered nurse. Thank you very much. Remember our slogan at the Fenork Drive-In Theater, come as you are, but stay in the car. Thank you.
12 and
7.5 minutes past 9, let's go back to more music. More often, as they say in the radio biz, at KPRZ.
The more I see you.
Slip into these new wax lips I just got over the weekend at the Jelly Belly store out in Studio City. Boy, I hit it rich over the weekend, didn't I? Had a whole month's supply of new wax lips here for the executives at KPRZ and the music of your life. 16 past 9 on the G.O. Show. Careful of my castanets over there. Richard Maltby. And same to you guys, too, from KPRZ. Prior to that, we heard from Dick Hames and the music of your life. It's 18 minutes past 9 on the Gary Owen Show, albeit the sun is shining right now. Enjoy it while you can. More rain is coming our way for Southern California. An update right after this. Here's Patty Pays.
I can't at home.
That's one of those tunes you want to just sing along, don't you? Mr. Mississippi made me feel a gnome. It's about 21 minutes past 9 o'clock. This is the Gary Owen Show. And it's not too nice. It is right now, but more rain coming our way. A brand new weather forecast just clearing right now. Clearing with ASCAP and BMI. Well, as a public service, the Gary Owen Show going to read from you right now out of the classified section. We have a big bulletin board here at KPRZ. Help wanted. Let's see. Young, pretty girl able to keep house for small group of men. Dislike of apples strongly suggested. Last girl fell asleep on the job. Long hours and short bosses. Call 462-6211. Ask for Doc, Sneezy, or Grumpy. If a witch answers, hang up. Let's see. What else we have here? Situation wanted. Feature reporter with blue hair seeking position with great metropolitan newspaper. Not too good at writing stories, but able to leap tall buildings in a single bound and faster than a speeding bullet. Please do not write replies on kryptonite. That's strange. For rent, apartment, one bedroom and nine bathrooms, ideal for person on Stillman's water diet. Well, that's interesting. Let's see. Big discount for sale, three mice, although unable to see and without tails would make fine pets for deaf cat. Right, box 501, care of farmer's wife.
Everyone enjoys going out for a fine dinner.
But some should receive a beautiful fresh flower served with our compliments. But why wait for Valentine's Day?
Oh, excuse me, you caught me again. Here I was sitting and waiting for Valentine's Day, and I shouldn't have. Well, thank you, Johnny, for reminding me. It's 24 minutes past 9 at KPRZ, and back to the music of your life. Today, about 66 degrees in Los Angeles. More rain coming later tonight and tomorrow.
And that's your March Market Scope. Remember, if you'd like to profile the radio stations in your hometown, send your recordings to me, Phil Wayne, at 7545 County Highway 71, Harpster, Ohio, 43323-9364. And for your efforts, I'll send you back a CD full of vintage radio jingles from the 60s and 70s. But you'd better hurry. Next month could be your last chance. Now here are the musings from the members.
This is John Wesley Smith from Hallsville, Missouri. I have to take back what I said about 1190, the Catholic station in Kansas City, being in all Spanish, because I've been hearing them in English late in the afternoons with the skip coming in. So maybe somebody that lives there in that area knows what they're doing. But I know I heard them in Spanish for a good while. At different times of the day, you know, when I was up in that area for a family gathering and so on. But apparently they're doing maybe a little bit of both. I don't know. Anyway, just wanted to retract what I'd said about them being totally in Spanish. On the morning of February 6th, I had some pretty good FM skip coming in from St. Louis, and I discovered that there's been a format change on 96.3. They're now no longer K-hits doing classic hits. They're called now 96.3. And I guess they're doing whatever passes for top 40 these days. But when I tuned in, it was right at the end of a music set, and they went into commercials, and there must have been about 10 or 12 minutes of commercials at least. And I guess they're modeling themselves after other stations in metro areas. When they came back on after the commercials, they were saying that they have 60 minutes of commercial-free music every time they start the music. But I just wonder, how in the world does an advertiser expect to be heard in the midst of all that? My goodness, that was just unbelievable. It appears that 810 WHB in Kansas City is operating on reduced power as of late February, and it's been that way for at least a week or so. They don't come in to my location as well as they normally do during the daytime, but they're actually coming in at night when they normally don't. And I was on the other side of the state on February 20th in the St. Louis area for a few hours, and 590 is still off the air, and there is now a new LPFM at 99.5, calling itself Praise 99.5, doing a black gospel format. Kind of interesting. There's black gospel in two places on AM at 690 and 1600.
Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Schwab from Richmond, Virginia, here on February the 6th with a couple of items for you. First of all, on February 1st, WHAN on 1430 in Ashland, about 20 miles north of Richmond, started simulcasting with a independent FM station in Charlottesville. Secondly, if you notice that a station has been broadcasting in Spanish on 840 and wondering what it was, it's WCEO in Columbia, South Carolina. They're daytime only. I think they finally collected that problem. Next of all, I've got a question. Wonder who says this is the DX Audio Service since 1985, and wonder what his background is. Finally, Fred, I want to tell you personally how much I'm going to miss you doing the DX Audio Service. I know that static is more prevalent than it used to be, and maybe subscription levels might be dropping, but I certainly don't want you to be discouraged and think that I don't appreciate your many years of work. There's nothing else like the DX Audio Service, so we certainly can't do without it. So it just absolutely must continue. So thank you for all the good work and 73s, and may the magazine continue for years to come. Joe Schwab on February the 6th with two more things real quick. I noticed that the 50,000-watt Cumulus stations are not carrying ABC News, but they're carrying a news that they don't tell you what network it's from. I suspicion it's NBC News, but WBT in Charlotte, which is an ABC affiliate, is carrying ABC News, so the network does exist, but not on any of the major Cumulus stations. So I wonder what's behind all that. Also, I wanted to ask Terry Livingston Hughes about this CC radio I've got and the whining that I get down at 550 and 540 when I start to move frequencies. You should have noticed the same thing. The Sea Crane people say it's local interference, but I don't believe that. But I'll give my number if she can give me a call. It's 803-944-7808. That's 803-944-7808. 73 is a good DX
again. This is Tim Hendel. And I had this question in January, but I guess Fred didn't have time to answer it, so I'm putting it on again. And I'm posing this question mostly to those of you who have actually worked in radio. What is the reason that so many radio stations do not like to give a legal ID, or they bury the ID in music or sound? It seems to me that your ID is the one and only thing that makes your radio station unique to any other radio stations. There's lots of Power 107 or Country 96 or News Talk 930. But there's only one WSM Nashville, Tennessee, or KFI Los Angeles, or even a little 1,000-watt station, WBTA 1490 Batavia, New York. That makes you unique. Would I go to convention and introduce myself as Huntsville Boy? No, I would tell people Tim Hendel. That's me. That's my name. Yet the unique and official name of a radio station, many stations almost seem ashamed to give it, and I would like to know why.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. Time's been getting us, so we haven't been able to answer a lot of questions. Otherwise, you wouldn't get any stories at the end of Side 2, so Anyways, let's jump into some questions, starting with one that Mike Lance had last month on the history of Lima radio. And basically, Mike, everyone thinks that WIMA was the first radio station here in Lima. That's not true. Our first radio station was born back in June of 1922. It was WOAC, and it came to life on the 360-meter band, or 750 kilohertz, with a whole 1 watt of power. The station was owned by the Moss Radio Company, and it later moved to 266 meters and raised its power to 50 watts. By the way, 266 is 1127 kilohertz. And the ownership was changed from the Moss Radio Company to the Page Organ Company. But this was just a name change, as Harry P. Moss owned both the Moss Radio Company and the Page Organ Company. From what I've been able to determine, the station was put on the air to basically allow people to hear what organs sounded like and help Harry Moss sell some organs to the public. And when it went off the air, it was December 31st, 1925, that they turned in their license. That it was years later, back in 1936, that Lima's first station showed up, and that was WBLY. WBLY was only 100 watts on several different frequencies. They started back in 1936 at 1210 on the radio dial, with only 100 watts of power, and it the tower was located at what is now WLIO Television in Lima. The station was a daytimer because of interference to WJW, who is also on 1210 on the dial. WJW eventually moved off 1210 and was assigned 1240 kilohertz with 250 watts of power, and eventually then moved to 850 kilohertz with 10,000 watts of power. Although only 100 watts of power, WBLY was heard by one radio listener over 544 miles away. And on February 28, 1939, WBLY became WLOK. The station was purchased by the Fort Industry Company for only $27,000. George Storr was the president and owner of Fort Industry, which also owned WSPD Toledo, WWVA Wheeling, West Virginia, and WMMN in Fairmont, West Virginia. It's ironic that George Storr went on to make his radio empire and start WGBS in Miami, KGBS out in Los Angeles, WIBG in Philadelphia, and he then took ownership of WJW in Cleveland. And that left WLOK to be sold to a gentleman who was a principal player of football in the Ohio State University. However, he passed away, and the station had to be sold. By the way, WLOK's FM came on the air sometime around 1948 or so. It was initially just a very low-power station at about 200 watts of power, on channel 277 or 103.3. However, later on, it boosted its power way up to 25,000 watts from a 300-foot tower located out back of where the WLOK AM tower stands. The first instance of WIMA showing up in any records was back in December 6 of 1948 as a CP. Now, there was a fight for WIMA at the time. In October of 1948, the FCC heard arguments from two broadcasters, Northwestern Ohio Broadcasting Company of Lima and Skyway Broadcasting of Columbus, Ohio. Both sought the 1150 spot on the radio dial for a station, and in filings at the time, Northwestern proposed 1,000 watts non-directional day and 1,000 watts directional night. Skyway wanted 5,000 watts day and 1,000 watts night, both on directional antennas. But the FCC ruled in Lima's favor, not without some backlash, and what we have today is the proposed 1,000 watts non-directional day, 1,000-watt directional night. According to the 1953 Broadcasting Yearbook, two television station construction permits were shown. WLOK had applied for Channel 73, while WIMA had applied for Channel 35. WLOK was the first to get on the air, Easter of 1953, and in April 18, 1953, WLOK TV was born, with 1,000 watts of power. That's right, on Channel 73. As Chief Engineer Maury Lamb said, if the wind blew hard, you could see it at the other end of the block. Fast forward up a few years, Lloyd Pixley, who was a star in football at Ohio State University, passed away, and WIMA was owned by George Hamilton and Robert Mack, and they acquired the station because they wanted the television station. WIMA-TV had yet to be born. WLOK-TV was on the air. Because you couldn't own more than one station on the band, some radio stations needed to go. So they turned in the licenses to WLOK 1240 and WLOK FM 103.3. They kept WIMA AM at 1150 and WIMA FM at 102.1, and then changed the call letters of the TV station from WLOK to WIMA TV, and changed the channel from 53 to 35. And by the way, we found this recording on an old LP that was stuck inside of a wall. Here's a WLOK AM sign-off.
Central Wartime, 12 o'clock midnight. Here's the latest weather forecast from the Associated Press. For Ohio, considerable cloudiness and continued moderately warm winds. And so we conclude another day's broadcasting activities from WLOK, the voice of Lima. WLOK is owned and operated by the Ford Industry Company and transmits on a federally assigned frequency of 1,240 kilocycles with an authorized full-time power of 250 watts. You may be assured that each day's programs are planned for your entertainment and education as well as public interest. We invite you to be with us tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. for the World News Roundup. Until then, the staff and management of WLOK join your announcer, Ray Oviatt, and your engineer, Maury Lamb, in wishing you a very pleasant good night and good morning.
Kind of cool, huh? Our next question comes from Joe Schwab. He asks, who is the guy that's been doing the announcing for the DX Audio Service, such as this one?
You're listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service.
That's Doc Morgan, a voiceover talent from Dallas, Texas. Has worked with Wally Walrow on occasion, and he also does the announcing for our TV station for our news broadcasts. And you may have heard him do stuff like this.
This is the home of New York sports superstars. Mike and Mike, Colin Cowherd, Stephen A., Dan Patrick, Keith Olbermann, and Michael Kay. 1050 ESPN Radio. The sports talk of New York. When it comes to country, we're the real thing. Big Country 99.5. You're in the middle of a 1,000-song weekend on Tulsa's only classic country station. Big Country 99.5. On the next Frasier tonight at 10 on Action 36 Cable 6, Roz's relatives are coming. They've got big hearts and big noses. Frasier tonight at 10, followed by another episode at 10:30 on Action 36 Cable 6. It's Game 6 of the NLCS. Mets, Cardinals, live from Shea Stadium. Next.
And Doc's even done the voiceover for the Tonka toy movie.
Tonka's Tough Truck Adventure. Available now only on DVD and VHS.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't thank John B. Wells for his help in things from time to time. John really didn't do much for the DX Audio Service, but he did a whole bunch of things for WNRC during its tenure on the air at various conventions. You may remember the name John B. Wells from Coast to Coast AM, his very short tenure there at the network. And he's also doing a lot of different projects and voiceover work, such as this.
A spectacle beyond anyone's imagination. Tonight, we will venture into a larger-than-life fairy tale. The violins will play their magical sound as you allow yourself to be carried away to a land where time stands still.
I am your shaman. Enjoy the sound of silence. And let yourself go.
As I said in the past, I'm kind of uncomfortable with people thanking me for the DX audio service, because really it's the editors and guys like Doc and John that have really helped us out from time to time. People that love radio. I don't think that members or the club management really understand how much devotion and how much love has gone into every single issue of the DX audio service. Thanks, guys. It's because of you that made the DX audio service such a great magazine. Our last question comes from Tim Hendel. He asks about the radio ID. Tim, I don't know if there's really a good answer to your question, because it comes down to branding from a radio station. You know, there's so many different names out there. The Eagle, The Buzzard, Bob, All Hits, Super Talk. I mean, all these different names. And let's face it, just like the name Bob, Jim, John, there are a lot of them. And you tune across the dial, and it's not uncommon to go from town to town and hear The Eagle, The Buzzard, Bob, you know, and such. But let's suppose that you in Huntsville, Alabama, have a radio station, and let's just suppose the call letters are WTH. It's going to be awful hard for another radio station to have those call letters. Therefore, you're somewhat unique. My feeling has always been, when I program radio stations, to use the call letters. Keep the slogans out of the picture, because they simply confuse people, and quite frankly, your competition can use them against you. So, what is the reason for the ID? Well, according to the FCC rules, you're supposed to give your call letters and city of license at the top of the hour. And I think stations in that case have kind of lost their soul. Unless a publisher is found for the DX audio service, our next musings will be the last one that we'll be doing. So I'd like to break our rule that we've had for, well, 30 years about keeping your muses brief and to the point, and allow you a little bit more time to reminisce and maybe wax on a few subjects of interest. What I would like to ask you, though, is to please organize your thoughts. Think it out very thoroughly before you call up the musings line. You know, sometimes we have members who will call 6, 7, even 8 times during the month and repeat sometimes the same material over and over, and we have to get in and edit it down and try to clean it up the best we can. We don't want anyone to sound like they're not knowing what they're talking about. So please organize your thoughts and give us one last call, because quite frankly, after I shut down the operations here in Lima, the telephone line for the musings will also go away. So your last chance to muse will be on our next edition, and hopefully we hear from some people who we've not heard from in a long time. That is our musings to the members. Now let's move on to some stories.
Talk radio's advertising problem. Audiences still tune in, but big marketers have fled the stations. Fear of being Twitter bombed. This article was written by Hannah Karp and appeared in the Wall Street Journal on February 4th, 2015. There are plenty of people listening to talk radio, but over the past 3 years it has become increasingly difficult to make money off it. More than 50 million people in the U.S. tune in each week to news talk radio stations that carry advertising, making it radio's second most popular format behind country music, according to Nielsen. But many national advertisers have fled from such stations in recent years, seeking to avoid associating their brands with potentially controversial programming. As a result, advertising on talk stations now costs about half what it does on music stations, given comparable audience metrics, according to industry executives. talk and news stations combined, generated $1.5 billion in revenue in 2013, down from $1.6 billion in 2011, according to the latest numbers from media research firm BIA Kelsey. Pure talk station revenue fell to $205 million from $217 million. The number of talk stations shrank to 510 from 546 over that time period, while the number of news stations increased by 150 to total 1,524. Talk radio's rankings hit a new low over the summer, drawing 8.1% of radio listeners in July, although its share rebounded to 9% in December, before the holidays, according to Nielsen. The shift reflects more than younger listeners flocking to digital media. Radio executives said the erosion of ad dollars from talk stations was driven in part by a series of organized social media campaigns by liberal activists in early 2012 that scared away advertisers. The social media campaigns followed remarks by conservative talk radio personality Rush Limbaugh, who called a Georgetown University law student a slut on the air after she had testified to lawmakers that her school should provide birth control coverage to students despite its Catholic affiliation. Mr. Limbaugh's spokesman, Brian Glicklich, said his comments were made in satire and decontextualized from his larger point. While few blue-chip national brands advertise directly on politically charged shows like Mr. Limbaugh's, the incident spooked many such companies from advertising on adjacent programming. Activists were encouraged to record the exact time that companies' ads ran on Mr. Limbaugh's show, and because stations occasionally broadcast ads at the wrong time, Brand suddenly had reason to reduce any risk of inadvertent appearances. A year later, brands including Lowe's and JCPenney were warning media buyers not to air their ads on news talk stations. Others, such as Clorox and Domino's Pizza, forbid media buyers to run their ads near or within 30 minutes of certain programming, listing dozens of talk shows, some conservative, some liberal, some religious, as examples in their instructions. Talk radio took off in the late 1980s, largely thanks to Mr. Limbaugh. In 1984, the former music radio DJ pioneered a new style of radio talk show that was more about showcasing his personality than about answering callers' questions. The show was syndicated nationally in 1988. And 5 years later, it was broadcast on more than 600 radio stations across the country to an audience of about 17 million, spurring others to create similar shows. The talk radio audience actually grew briefly after the 2012 controversy, drawing 11.1% of radio listeners in November 2012, its highest percentage since the radio industry started measuring listenership with digital monitors, according to Nielsen. Still, the 2012 social media campaigns on talk radio gave advertisers the jitters, according to syndicators and media buyers. The brands, according to one radio executive, don't want to risk being Twitter-bombed. Radio stations now have to consider what the fallout will be before taking on talk shows, said one veteran media buyer. Local and direct response advertisers such as flower delivery and financial services continue to advertise on conservative talk shows, but overall demand has tanked among national advertisers for anything else that could air on the same stations, putting some syndicators and stations in a bind on their programming. As a result, syndicators are now focused on creating more sports and entertainment news programming that can air on music-oriented stations. Cumulus Media Incorporated, for example, has invested heavily in its country music brand, Nash, creating a country music-themed morning talk show and a Nash News feed. Cumulus declined to comment. iHeartMedia Incorporated's syndication arm, Premier Networks, sells the shows hosted by conservative personalities, including Mr. Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and Glenn Beck. A Premier Networks spokeswoman declined to say how the value of ads on these shows has changed since 2012, but said that Premier had added 125 new advertisers since 2011. Seven of its top 25 talk show advertisers have left since 2011, she added. A year ago, iHeartMedia, formerly known as Clear Channel, moved Mr. Limbaugh's show from its flagship Los Angeles talk station, KFI, to another of its Los Angeles stations, KTLK. KFI's revenue had fallen to $39 million in 2013 from $48.1 million in 2011, according to BIA Kelsey. An iHeartMedia spokeswoman declined to comment. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Chris Gay.
Radio Shack shut down. Part of the assets are being transferred to Sprint in a store deal. This story from the staff of Bloomberg News, February 2, 2015. Radio Shack Corporation has shut down the almost century-old retail chain in a bankruptcy deal that would sell about half of its store leases to Sprint Corporation and close the rest, sources told Bloomberg News. The location sold to the Overland Park, Kansas-based Sprint would operate under the wireless carrier's name, meaning Radio Shack would cease to exist as a standalone retailer, said the people, who asked not to be identified because the talks aren't public. Sprint declined to comment on the report. Rumors about a possible Sprint Radio Shack deal surfaced several weeks ago. Sprint and Radio Shack have also discussed co-branding the stores, Bloomberg sources said. It's also possible that another bidder could emerge that would buy Radio Shack and keep it operating, the sources said. The Chinese backers who took the Brookstone chain out of bankruptcy, SandPower Group, also have been in discussions about bidding for Radio Shack assets, one person familiar with the talks said. The discussions represent the end game for a chain that traces its roots to 1921, when it began as a mail-order retailer for amateur, ham radio operators, and maritime communications officers. It expanded into a wider range of electronics over the decades, and by 1980 was seen as a destination for personal computers, gadgets, and components that were hard to find elsewhere. In recent years, though, competition from Walmart and an array of e-commerce sellers hurt customer traffic. In a sign of Radio Shack's escalating woes, the New York Stock Exchange said Monday it would suspend trading of the stock immediately. The exchange took the step after Radio Shack failed to submit a business plan that would address its lack of compliance with NYSE rules. Companies listed on the exchange are required to have an average market value of at least $50 million for 30 straight days, or shareholder equity of that amount. Radio Shack received a rescue financing package from Standard LP in October, and the hedge fund would serve as the lead bidder in a filing and provide debtor-in-possession financing after filing, said the people familiar with the matter. The investment firm arranged $535 million of first-lien loans in October and is the biggest shareholder of the retailer. Liquidating the stores would also let Radio Shack avoid a battle with its lenders over control of the company. Radio Shack currently has more than 4,000 company-operated U.S. stores. Sprint is discussing the acquisition of 1,300 to 2,000 locations, according to Bloomberg. Marianne Roth, a spokesman for Fort Worth, Texas-based Radio Shack, declined to comment, as did representatives from Standard General and Brookstone. Radio Shack CEO Joe Manaca has been remodeling stores and revamping the retailer's product lineup in a bid to revive sales. Sprint, meanwhile, is expanding its chain. CEO Marcelo Claré told investors in a conference last month that the company would be adding retail locations. Meanwhile, this story was published in Reuters, titled Radio Shack Files for Chapter 11 Bankruptcy Protection, on February 5, 2015. Electronics retailer Radio Shack Corporation filed for U.S. bankruptcy protection on Thursday and had said that it had a deal in place to sell as many 2,400 stores to an affiliate of hedge fund Standard General, its lender and largest shareholder. wireless company, Sprint Corporation, would operate as many as 1,750 of these stores under an agreement with Standard General, Sprint said separately. Radio Shack's bankruptcy, which has been expected for months, follows 11 consecutive unprofitable quarters as the company has failed to transform itself into a destination for mobile phone buyers. But its sale agreement with Standard General could spare it the fate most retailers suffer in Chapter 11 liquidation. Radio Shack said in a statement that the Standard General affiliate, called General Wireless, will acquire between 1,500 and 2,400 of its more than 4,000 stores. Sprint would occupy about one-third of each Radio Shack store, selling mobile devices across Sprint's brand portfolio, as well as Radio Shack products, services, and accessories, Sprint said in its statement. Other potential buyers will also have the opportunity to bid on Radio Shack assets. Any deal will need the approval by the U.S. Bankruptcy Court in Delaware, so nothing is etched in stone. Sprint's chief executive, Marcelo Claure, said in a statement that the deal will allow Sprint to grow branded distribution quickly and cost-effectively. Claure said Radio Shack had incredible store locations, and he was keen to acquire some to cut down on long waits at Sprint's current stores. Customers have had to wait 1 to 2 hours to get a phone, and that's not acceptable, Claure said. Radio Shack, which listed $1.2 billion of assets and $1.3 billion of debt in its Chapter 11 filing, said it also has an agreement with a lender group led by DW Partners for a $285 million loan to operate while in bankruptcy. These steps are the culmination of a thorough process intended to drive maximum value for our stakeholders, Radio Shack Chief Executive Joe Manaka said in a statement. The chain's more than 1,000 dealer franchise stores, its Mexican subsidiary, and its Asian operations are not part of the bankruptcy, it said. Retailers that enter bankruptcy usually liquidate, in large part because of rules under U.S. bankruptcy law that give them precious little time to decide whether to keep or break leases. Recent retailers that met their demise in bankruptcy include Lomans Incorporated and Borders Group, which were sold to liquidation firms, and Coldwater Creek. Radio Shack hopes to avoid the same fate. It is being advised by the law firm Jones Day, investment bank Lazard, and financial advisors at Mava and FTI. A full list of all the stores being closed is on our member help site at www.dxas.org/RS/capital-L-small-i-small-s-small-t.pdf. In Dallas, Texas, I'm Wally Warbro for the DX Audio Service.
Whatever happened to Heathkit? This article was written on December 21st, 2014 by Daniel Turteman. Whatever happened to Heathkit? The do-it-yourself electronics kits that used to be so popular at the dawn of the computer age. For decades, Heathkit was a household name amongst those who liked to play with electronics. From 1947 until 1992, Heathkit, which was the brand name of kits and other electronic projects produced and marketed by the Heath Company, according to Wikipedia, was amongst the biggest, if not the biggest game in town when it came to electronic kits. Most ham radio enthusiasts and electrical engineers of a certain age remember fondly their first Heathkit, wrote EDN Network in May of 2013. Everybody had at least one Heathkit. Heath got its start in 1926 in Maine as an aircraft firm before pivoting, in today's parlance, to other businesses. According to that state's Herald Palladium newspaper, Heath eventually turned to electronics after World War II and bought a large surplus of wartime electronic parts to build kits. At its peak, it had 1,800 workers. By 1992, though, things had changed. For some years, the company moved into the educational market. But in 2008, that last hope of staying alive died. The situation was purely one of the economy. Heathkit's last known owner, Don Desrochers, told the Herald Palladium newspaper in 2012, Heathkit Educational Systems was primarily dependent upon federal and state funding for schools. spending in education continued to drop down, and it was economically unfeasible to continue to operate. In 2011, someone running Heathkit.com announced that the company would resume manufacturing electronic kits. By popular demand, Heathkit is bringing back the kit-building tradition. This was in the August 15, 2011 post. The first kit will be a garage parking assistant, which lets you build your own system that uses ultrasonic sound waves to locate your car as it enters the garage. Disappointed. But according to Adafruit, today, one of the biggest manufacturers and merchants of do-it-yourself electronic kits in the world, the promise of a reborn Heathkit was just that. Nothing materialized, Adafruit wrote in a blog post on Saturday, leaving fans of the company, who had excitedly anticipated its return, very disappointed. To Adafruit, a company seen by some as their heir to Heathkit's legacy, that failure to begin selling kits again, especially in light of a Reddit Ask Me Anything appearance as a year ago by someone purported to be a member of Heathkit's board of directors, has left a huge unanswered mystery. Whatever happened to Heathkit? Given the money on the table, it's a big surprise that Heathkit hasn't come back. Adafruit has become a $33 million company since it was founded in 2005, and it seems likely that a relaunched Heathkit could quickly do big business, especially given its countless passionate fans. To leave those fans hanging only adds to the mystery. Heathkit is a brand that self-described old-timers love, Adafruit co-founder Philip Tyrone told VentureBeat. They want it to come back and sell kits and be part of this maker movement that Heathkit basically pioneered and started. Added Tyrone, many want this return to happen so bad, but each time it's been a false start or a failure. The latest iteration is bizarre and weird. Someone should shed some light on this. And that's exactly what Tyrone attempted to do in the Adafruit post on Saturday. Although he was unable to arrive at a definitive answer, he did what would have to be called a very thorough job of digging through all available evidence before hitting a wall. VentureBeat attempted to reach the person currently listed as the point of contact for Heathkit.com by email, but has yet to receive a response. This story will be updated when we get one, and it hasn't been updated as of yet. Pausing in our own soldering. If the words that, to this day, live on at Heathkit.com are to be believed, someone is at home at Heathkit, and the lights are very much on. Though the site may well be out of date, someone in charge wrote recently under the heading, "The news of my death has been greatly exaggerated." A number of our fans have found some ingenious and unexpected methods of sending in inquiries, suggestions, and even resumes to the Heathkit team, as well as sharing with us wonderful childhood memories of kit building. We're very excited to see such an outpouring of support. This was on December 20th of 2013. We took a brief pause in our own soldering for 3 hours to answer your questions on Reddit. The author of those words also alluded to a special competition. There's a catch hidden within arm's reach of the location, Brooklyn, New York, that this photo was taken from. The challenge reads, "Inside it, you'll find a passphrase and a set of instructions. The first fan to send us the passphrase will be sent out one of our first kits signed by the Heathkit team." A Heathkit Vectorscope. Someone set up a Reddit account called "I Found the Heathkit" and claimed success. But little else is known about the outcome of the contest, Tyrone wrote. Just as unclear is who runs the Heathkit Twitter account, who's behind Heathkit's Facebook page, or for that matter, anything else about the company, or whether it even exists as 2014 comes to a close. Those familiar with the maker movement know that today, Adafruit has built up a credible reputation as the standard bearer of the electronics kit community. Yet Adafruit, which was founded by Lamore Fried and which is at the vanguard of the opening source hardware movement, is very much a fan of others who do similar work. Adafruit fills the void Heathkit's departure left, Torno said. People build a kit not because of the outcome, the physical thing. They make a kit for the experience and skill they learn. The time you spend making a kit is precious and rewarding. That's what Adafruit does, and that's what people remember about Heathkit. As for Heathkit itself, it's doing little to keep the mystery from building, a full year after the Reddit experience. In a lengthy FAQ on Heathkit.com, someone wrote that the company definitely does exist, is absolutely in business, and is for sure making all new kits. When it comes to explaining who's behind the company, though, there's nothing but more on this later, an assertion that Heathkit is in stealth mode. And why, if everything the company has said and done over the last year is on the up and up, has Heathkit chosen stealth? Efficiency, the FAQ explains. Here are two business choices. Choice A is, early on we spent lots of money, time and energy on press releases and marketing and public interaction. Choice B is, we quietly assemble a talented team, learn what our customers and community wants, and put all our energy into creating great new products, while sustaining or improving great vintage products. Which choice is better? And that article was written on December 21st, 2014, by Daniel Turteman.
How cops are catching grow ops with AM radios. This article appeared in the column The Drug Warrior with Keith Graves and appeared on the website policeone.com. Many ham operators can locate a grow simply by taking a radio and portable antenna out into their neighborhood and using the radio to triangulate the exact location of the grow. With the proliferation of indoor marijuana grows, the indoor horticulture industry has been booming. Chinese manufacturers are turning out indoor grow equipment at a rapid pace, with little to no regulatory oversight or compliance. Because of this, there has been a significant amount of radio frequency interference, RFI. Before we get into how to detect a marijuana grow with your car radio, you have to understand some simple mechanics of how a grow operates. To grow marijuana indoors, you need supplemental lighting necessary for photosynthesis. These lights may be fluorescent, LED, and for larger operations, high-pressure sodium, HPS, or metal halide, MH. The HPS and MH lamps may be 1,000 watts per lamp and require a ballast for proper operation. These ballasts were originally magnetic, but in the past few years have become electronic. These devices are subject to FCC Part 18 rules, but there appears to be a total disregard for the FCC rules. Many, if not most, electronic ballasts are manufactured in China and may have little FCC stickers on them, but there is no evidence of any testing for compliance having been done. Because of this, a large amount of RFI is interfering with nearby electronics. As an example, one grow next to a Cal Fire station, California State Fire Agency, caused a continuous hum over the station's call box speaker and interfered with them receiving radio broadcasts over their station's PA. Ham Radio Helpers. Reports have begun to flood into the National Association for Amateur Radio about interference with their ham radios from their neighbors' marijuana grows. The most complaints come from California and Colorado for obvious reasons. Many ham radio operators began to see a correlation with marijuana grows in this RFI. One amateur radio operator located 5 marijuana grows near his house due to RFI alone. Many ham operators can locate a grow simply by taking a radio and portable antenna out into their neighborhood and using the radio to triangulate the exact location of the grow. One industrious ham operator went to his local grow shop and borrowed several lights and ballast to test for RFI. He found that one light and ballast setup would cause interference up to 700 meters. From our experience, we know that most indoor grows have more than one light and ballast, which would amplify the RFI. Pioneering field use. One narcotics officer from the San Francisco Bay Area turns his car radio to 560 AM when he checks out potential indoor grows. He's checked out 7 indoor marijuana grows since learning about the RFI issue. All 7 times, the car's radio showed significant interference from the ballasts inside of the grow location. One ham radio operator described the interference this way. It can be pops, it can be a buzzing sound, whistles, just all kinds of different noises that we'll hear. Tom Thompson, a ham radio operator, told a Colorado newspaper, "If I can track this down, anybody can track this down. If I listen long enough, I can tell when they turn the lights off. You can tell exactly when the harvest is." This method of finding marijuana grows isn't foolproof, but it can be another useful tool in your toolbox.
And that is our DX Audio Service for March 2015. Only one more DX Audio Service to go from Lima, Ohio, before we do the handoff or sign it off for good. So, hopefully we hear from you on our next Musings to the Members. Until next time, 73 Good DX, and get out and support radio.